we have our U.S. Representative, Congressman Rick Crawford, joining us right now. And Congressman Crawford, thanks for joining us, and look forward to talking to you every month throughout 2020. So thank you for joining us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, I wanted to ask you about kind of about you. I know that you do not have an opponent in 2020, which is rare. You don't have a Democrat. You don't have a third party candidate. Kind of your thoughts on that.
Well, first off, I'm very thankful for that. I appreciate the folks here in the first district. I think it probably, you can attribute that to some of the things that are taking place in the district. There's been a sea change here since 2010 with regard to, the popularity of the Republican Party versus the other party. And I think that, I think people are probably more comfortable with a smaller government and pro-life, pro-Second Amendment agenda. So I think that's as reflective of that as anything, and that's probably what you could attribute most of that to.
I know that you said that one of the things that you're going to be working on is for the Ag Committee, for Chairman of the Ag Committee, I guess. Kind of tell us a bit about that.
Well, the chairmanship for the House Ag Committee, that's assuming we regain the majority. If not, if we stay in the minority, that becomes a ranking member, but it's the top Republican spot on the Ag Committee, and that's as open as Chairman Conaway was term limited, and also he's retiring. So in either case, that would be an open position. And so I've decided to throw my hat in the ring for that. I think it'd be really good for Arkansas. I think it would be actually good for the South and for the country. I think, I have a pretty diverse background in agriculture, from production agriculture to marketing and to other things, and communications and so on. So having served on the committee now for 10 years, almost 10 years, I'm probably the second most senior on the committee. And so I think it's an opportunity to move up and do a little more and take more of a leadership role.
What does that mean, though, for Arkansas agriculture?
Well, one of the things that we have in Arkansas is a very unique delegation. We're a relatively small state from a population standpoint, so we have four members in the House, and our four members work together for the state, even though obviously we have our own districts, we have our own constituents, that we view our issues through sort of the lens of Arkansas and not so much the lens of the district. And what I'm saying is that we have a diverse set of committee assignments that allow us to work more effectively for the entire state. So while the first district of Arkansas obviously is heavy row crop country, we also have a pretty diverse ag economy as you go into the hill counties with livestock and poultry, even some timber. But what this means is for the entire state, is that the rest of the delegation will be supporting me and looking to me for leadership on ag issues that affect the entire state, in fact, the region. But I think this is just good for all of us, that it, gives us a more prominent role in ag policy. And the next chairman will likely be largely responsible for the next farm bill. And so, that means that we're going to be out engaging with stakeholders and getting input. Where do we want to be? How do we want to get there in the next 5 to 10 years? Because these farm bills come up quick. They're difficult to maneuver. They're hard to get through Congress. It's not even a political prerogative. It's usually geographic. And where we find that, probably an equal number of Democrats and Republicans generally don't want to support farm bills. And so it's a delicate maneuver to try and muster the support you need for a farm bill. And, need somebody who can get that done. And, we also got to be thinking more long term. We talk about this, it's a 5-year piece of legislation. We really need to think about how we set ourselves up in the ag community long term. And I'm talking 10, 15, 20 years. And the other thing that we're going to have a conversation about is we have a 21st century ag economy. We have farmers that are more productive than they've ever been. They adopt technology every year. Sometimes, you know, even in the middle of a year on the fly, because that's how fast technology is changing. And yet we're reliant on a 20th century Depression era setup with regard to farm policy that doesn't adequately reflect the 21st century ag economy and doesn't adequately address the needs of farmers across the country on a broad scale. So a lot of things we need to be doing differently. And those are conversations that I think that I'm very well positioned to have with farmers and stakeholders.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. President Trump is going to be releasing his budget today. What do you expect to see out of that, and what would you like to see in the budget?
Well, I would, you know, I try not to get too worked up over presidential budgets, and this is the same conversation that I've had many times when President Obama was in office, and that is that Congress doesn't adopt presidential budgets. It just never happens. And so, you know, the president will put out his budget request and send it over, and, you know, both chambers will look at it, both parties will look at it, and invariably something else is offered, and he ends up signing something that wasn't what he sent to the House or to the Senate. So, you know, I don't know what to expect in his budget. I expect it to be fiscally sound. I think that it's probably, depending on where you are and what your particular pet issues are, it may not appeal to everybody, but it, you know, it should probably appeal to conservatives. But again, you know, you got to remember that the Democrats hold the majority in the House, and so the idea that even something close to what the president's asking for is probably a long shot. But it does set out a framework, and that's the key here, and it's the same thing with the Obama administration or any other administration. What it does do is makes a statement about what the president is committed to, and then the House and the Senate will work from there. So while we don't adopt the president's budget, it is a sort of a starting point for the conversation. And, you know, it'll, somehow we'll put something together and hope we can get beyond all the partisan stuff and just try to move forward as collegially as we possibly can. But, you know, I expect this to be a fight like most everything has been over the last year or two.
You know, and that's one thing that a lot of people have been saying, whether they're Republican or Democrat, you know, that Congress just needs to get back to regular work and that. So what is what have you been working on to try to do that? Is there an attitude in the House to try to get back to work, or is there still a probe? Like I heard that John Bolton might be called in and some others might be called in. What are you hearing right now?
Personally, I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. I've heard talk about, you know, John Bolton being called back in, that Adam Schiff is not finished, that he wants to continue on with his impeachment nonsense. And, you know, I sit on the Intelligence Committee, so I have sat through a lot of bloviation from Adam Schiff over the last few years, and it's not getting any better, and I don't expect it. They're going to just look at this Senate acquittal and go, okay, let's move on, because they've indicated that they're not willing to move on. So what that means is everything that we're trying to do to accomplish, national security issues, fiscal issues, anything, you know, education, border security, things of that nature, that stuff's being left unaddressed. And it's really a shame, because there are a lot of us that have some really good ideas about how we could do some things to improve our country, and unfortunately the other side is just obsessed with trying to take down the president. And that kind of speaks to a larger issue, is that if you had any faith in your own candidates for president, maybe you wouldn't feel such pressure to try and undermine the president rather than, you know, trust the voters to make the decision. If it's as bad as you say it is, it should be fairly easy. You know, just turn it over to the voters and let the voters make the decision. But they know that's not the case. And so that's why they perseverate on this issue. And that's why we're really not getting a whole lot done in Washington. And it's unfortunate, because there are a lot of good ideas. And we think we have several that address a lot of key issues that folks here at home are dealing with and that have concerns about.
One of the things that really opened up some eyes, though, is when President Trump had released Gordon Sondland and also Alexander Vindman, and those, and some people are saying it's because it's kind of retaliation and payback, and some will say that's kind of how it's been ever since he started, that there's that constant, you know, friction and turnover in the White House. Kind of your thoughts on those, on that criticism.
Well, I find that, you know, interesting and somewhat ironic, because nobody had the same concern when President Obama did it or when President Bush did it. It's a naturally occurring thing. It's just the fact that the media are now actively engaged in, you know, challenging every decision that the president makes. You mentioned two individuals, Vindman and Sondland. Let's keep in mind that these individuals serve at the pleasure of the president. There's nothing anywhere prescribed in the Constitution or anywhere else that says that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman gets to stay in the White House regardless. I'm a military veteran, served in the Army, and I find this whole deal troubling, number one. Number two, this is a natural rotation for someone that's a lieutenant colonel preparing to go to the war college. My biggest problem is I don't think he ought to get to go to the war college. I think, he's got a history of working outside his chain of command, not just with President Trump, but with others. And I think that if people did a deep dive and objectively addressed his record of service, they might feel the same way. But with regard to him leaving the White House, this was going to happen. It's just happening. It just so happens that Vindman decided to get an attorney and make a big issue out of it when he's going to the war college, which is a natural progression for a lieutenant colonel prior to becoming a colonel. So that should be of no surprise, but they're making it a surprise because they want to try and do damage to the president. As far as Ambassador Sondland goes, again, every ambassador serves at the pleasure of the president. The president dictates foreign policy, not the ambassador, and certainly not a lieutenant colonel who's a holdover from the previous administration. So nobody should be surprised or shocked by any of this. And, you know, trying to demagogue this issue with the fact that, you know, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman is a war hero. There was a war hero on the news recently that had some pretty poignant comments to make about what constitutes a war hero, and I think that we may be overusing the word just a little bit.
Congressman Rick Crawford, we have run out of time, but thank you so much for joining us as always here on KASU, and look forward to talking to you next month.
All right, thanks so much.